Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
Welcome back to 11 Personnel. It feels good to be back here talking with Adam Luckett. We're not in person. We're talking afar, and a lot's changed since the last time we talked football, Adam Luckett. I don't think I'm allowed to open the show with Mike Leach memes anymore.
Hey, man. First of all, congratulations, Nick.
Thank you.
Dad strength, how do you feel like Superman walking around?
I really do, man. My mustache is so much fuller than it was before. Like, it's incredible, the transformation. So I'm very happy. Baby Duke is very healthy, and it's been a wild ride. And I'm excited to kind of get into a new routine. We finally got the other routine going. So, you know, baby's asleep right now. Bath time's in about 2 hours, so we can't go more than 2 hours like it.
Okay, I don't think we'll have that problem. This isn't a Bill Simmons podcast, so it doesn't run extra long. But, yeah, man, congratulations. Glad to be back. It felt weird not being able to podcast and talk football there for a couple weeks.
I know, man. And I was bummed because we actually were scheduled to record two podcasts the day that Brooke, my wife, started, like, uh-oh, it's happening. Like, we better get ready. So I spent the whole day getting this BB and Jam stuff ready. So that's kind of been rolling in perpetuity without me. Have you enjoyed the BB and Jam tournament, Adam Luckett?
Yes, it has been interesting. Those graphics we got are pretty sweet, man.
Oh, yeah, and I can't take any credit for that. That was all Tyler. And I'm actually ashamed to admit that I didn't even notice the KSR in the background until recently. but... I thought that was a fun kind of thing to do during our however you want, our quarantine times, but I don't want to get too into the weeds because this is a football podcast, but I'm surprised at some of the early returns like it, because there are a couple teams in here that like nobody gave Nerlens and Archie Goodwin a shot at beating Shepard and Muhammad, but I think that's a weak number one seed, the 1998 national championship team.
Mm-hmm. I think you, with anything you do like this, obviously the people going to be voting for the most part are a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get some recency bias just because some of the young bucks don't remember back in the day. But yeah, it's been interesting just to see everybody's kind of take on that. And just coming up with the duos was a
see, that was
in of itself.
Man, okay. I want to just, because we were talking about this when I was trying to figure them out. Because, A, I kind of miss having your favorite players stick around for a little while. Like, it was kind of cool to be like, oh, Tony Dilk was the leading scorer for 3 years. Like, Jamal Mashburn was awesome for 3 years. But, like, trying to get players in certain years figured out right, like, do you put Derek Anderson on his 97 team, even though he didn't finish the season? Like, and that was the story of the year. Can you get? I wanted to put Tayshaun and Bogan together, but then you made the 0-3 team suck, and that was maybe Tubby's best team. So, like, it was tough. It was tough.
Yeah. I mean, for Cal, that era is easier because the players are usually only there one season.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get some players that stick around for a little bit, it can be a little tough trying to get the right duos.
Two duos I wanted to point out, though, that I think might be – I seeded them based on how they finished the year, just their teams in general. But two duos that I think are going to be underrated and underappreciated, Travis Ford and Jamal Mashburn, and in 1993, that Final Four team, Patino's first, and the P.J. Washington Tyler Hero. I think P.J. Washington Tyler Hero should beat Davis and MKG. Like, they should. If this was the NBA Jam video game, those two are beating Davis and MKG all day.
Just back to the Mashburn. I think people our age and younger don't really appreciate just how good he was. Like, he was like a 20-10 guy, like as a freshman in college.
Yeah, he's a top five scorer in school history. Like, he's about awesome.
That, yeah, I mean, we talk about that 92 team and the story of the Unforgettables, but, I mean, the reason they were able to do all that was because Mashburn carried them.
Yeah, and then he put the team on his back. And then a 93 really,
team, that really, the 93 team was good, but, I mean, they just, I mean, Mashburn was, he was the star.
It was him and Travis Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I guess, I think they had a freshman Roderick Rhodes on that team.
Freshman Tony Delk, freshman Walter McCarty.
Yeah, who are, you know, obviously better than the Unforgettables. No offense to all of our Unforgettable lovers. But, dude, the only reason why they lost in 92 and 93 was because Mashburn fouled out of the game. Like, as soon as they fouled out, the game was
off. Yeah, yeah. If he doesn't foul out, it's probably a wholly different story for sure. But anyway, yeah, man, but we got to get on Leach. All right.
Yeah.
We start
yeah,
off every podcast. This has become quite a tradition. And who, I mean, were you really surprised? I mean, when I saw it, I was like, well, that's about par for the course.
Well, and here's the problem, though, Luckett, is that, like, part of this is I was in sleep-deprived mode. That first few days, dude, it when you wake up to a baby crying, it will terrify you. but, it like, when I saw it, I was just like, oh, classic Leafs, that's funny. And it didn't register to me, like, ooh, you can't do a noose in Mississippi. Like, that's bad. Just bad. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, if it looks like a dog, walks like a dog, barks like a dog, it's probably going to do some, you know, stuff. Like, Leach, that's his identity, the quirky old weird guy. And you stick him in Lubbock, Texas, West Texas. You stick him in Pullman, Washington, middle of nowhere on the border of Idaho. Washington by Idaho border, like that stuff, like it just kind of gets caught up in the watch there. But like we talked about in the SEC at Mississippi State, man, it's just different because of the fishbowl, how much coverage this area gets. So I wasn't surprised. I think that's going to be something he's going to have to like learn to adjust. And did you see the statement that I believe their AD made, or that their statement was? Yeah. It was like, he's got to learn the cultural atmosphere or whatever here in Starkville.
They're sending him to like the Mississippi Civil Rights Museums as like punishment. Which, like, honestly, I can't think of any like that. That's not punishment. Like, ooh, Mike Leach has to go to a museum. Like, dude, that guy's gonna love it. He freaking loves museums. That's his cup of tea. The one kid who decommitted, Lovett, I believe is his name.
He committed to Florida State today. He was a grad transfer, defensive line.
Yeah, like his dad was like, we can't, I don't trust a leader who's just going to, you know, throw anything out there like that. He said, I feel if he can do it, the kids are going to feel like they can do it. That's kind of Leach's MO, though. It's just like, it's at the whims of whatever. It's willy-nilly, and it's going to get him in trouble. I did not foresee this, though, Luckett, as noose meme being Mike Leach's first stumbling block to returning to the SEC.
I didn't either. But I was not surprised.
Oh, man. It's unfortunate.
And I think we've seen him kind of take a step back and pump the brakes on some of these tweets he's been sending out.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And you know what, though? Like, I don't think he meant any harm from it either.
No, he didn't.
I think it's just...
He's exactly. trying to be funny, like, and he crossed the line by being a funny guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those two that, like, early Facebook, you could get away with that. Now, while everybody's on quarantine, it's like the dude in NASCAR who dropped the N-bomb. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't say, obviously you can't say that anywhere, but, like, the timing of it. You're stuck in the news cycle, man. Like, I'm sure that I wasn't listening to Paul Feinbaum the day that this meme went out, but I'm sure it was number one topic of conversation because there's literally nothing else to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you just – the NASCAR, that's a different thing in itself.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. It's a whole different scale, but it's kind of – these football coaches, they're now the kind of only source of news because we don't have sports. So when they talk – stuff happens. And you know what? Another one of our guys, he opened his big mouth and he got into him a little bit of trouble too. Mike Gundy.
Dude.
Mike Gundy.
Are we again, I hate to go into this, but are we surprised the mullet head coach was the one that came out and said that?
No, none at all. And and like, it's one of those things too that I read it and I wish I could have heard it the first time I read it, because I'm sure they said his opening statement was just like 20 minutes of him just preaching to nobody. These football coaches too, when they get on these conference calls and they're not in front of podiums, they just feel like they can talk for an indefinite amount of time and they're bound to just say something stupid.
Even our guy Stoops went long on his.
Oh man.
What was about the Stoops, longest filibuster Stoops is not something I thought I'd see during the quarantine.
he went on for quite a long time, but in Gundy's case, Gundy's like, why? I can't see us. Why we're not going back to it? I mean, the state economic, like that was the part where it's like, oh, buddy,
yeah. You can't bring up. Like, it just opens the bottle on the pay for play. Truthers, the pay for play, you know, media, the fire starting media, I think what Gundy was trying to do is, I think a sense that a lot of people have, like, we're currently in this lockdown state, like, eventually people are going to be like, all right, like, it's been 3-4 months now. Like, I can't, like, we can't stay in this house too much longer. Like, we have to try to get back to some level of normalcy. And mm-hmm. I think that's what, to a point, I think that's what Gundy was trying to say or get across. He just botched the delivery of the message.
Well, and that's what it was. He got to talking for like 20 minutes and nobody was stopping him. Mm-hmm. He didn't have some PR person like, Mike, cut it. Because he brought up the, like, well, you know, we got some old people in our facility. We can get some younger ones. You know, they'll be fine.
Right, yeah. And it was the old, you know, they're 21, 22. One gets sick, we can quarantine him for a week or two and then get back in it. And
we quarantined him already. Like,
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah, that's what he said. We quarantine him already when they have the flu. It just, he comes off as a jackass, to put it bluntly. But I do think there's a sense for that. And as we get further along, like, people eventually, there's going to be a pushback. And I think we're going to get into that when we think football is going to start. Eventually, yeah. There's going to be, you know, everybody's obeying right now for the most part, I think. But eventually, I think the public itself is going to be like, okay, like, are we going to do this forever? Like, eventually people have to get back to work, have to get out of their house.
And to your point earlier, like, he opened up that Pandora's box with the, you know, the economy's got to get back going. And
right, yeah, exactly.
But that's ultimately the biggest benefit to, will we actually have college football or not? John Clay, he did a media poll with, like, the most random media folks you can imagine, from, like, Chuck Culpepper. I mean, just, it was he cast a very wide net with people that he follows. And the general consensus, there was like three or four that were like, nope, not happening. And then there were like, you know, maybe four or five who said, okay, it's going to happen on time. But almost everybody else, including myself, said that it'll probably be delayed, but it will get played because college football pays for so much. It's basically almost every athletic program's entire budget for the year. And to go a year without college football would just be disastrous fiscally, economically, for the states, for the athletic programs, for the universities. And we haven't gotten to a breaking point by any means. Like, it's still a ways away. But I think that's one thing for college football fans out there that, like, okay, we can – they're going to do whatever they can to play this season in some form or fashion, because there's so much at stake with college football. Even more so than the NCAA tournament.
Right. First things first, I want to say, like, no one knows. This is uncharted territory. We're all still trying to figure out. Nobody knows. But I think the best thing when you start looking towards the future is the PGA Tour is planning on having all their big events in the fall. The NFL, I mean, they're operating as normal other than the, I mean, other than going virtual for the draft, but everything else is still scheduled. Major League Baseball is planning on starting up, I believe, starting the season in June. So that right there tells me, like, those leagues think, or they at least are operating in a fashion that would tell you that they think we're going to be able to do that by the fall. So I think that's the first good sign if you're looking for good signs.
Ooh, and to add to that good sign, Georgia, Alabama, the same day as Master Saturday.
We can get into all how this coronavirus can be kind of a blessing in disguise as a sports fan if we are able to get back to normal because of this jam-packed loaded schedule. It's going to give us. I'm just going to. I might not be sleeping very much there for about 3 or 4 months.
The eyes are going to be bleeding from watching nonstop sports.
And just, I've been thinking about this myself. The College Game Day, they're going to have opportunities to do some stuff this year. Like Nick, if the season kicks off on time, why wouldn't Game Day go to the infield for Derby?
Dude, that would be so awesome. I mean,
they could do a Thursday show, Louisville at NC State, and then they can do an infield Derby. They could do half infield, half Millionaires Row.
I mean,
because Herb Street goes to Derby every year, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a big, big horse racing
guy. Felica's huge.
Yeah, they owned a horse that ran Oaks Day last year.
Yeah,
and I think it was called like Herbie or something like that.
Right. And then like you just mentioned Masters, like that, like it'd be weird it being at Augusta because you couldn't have the crowd or the signs or anything. But it might just be like a one time thing. Let's just do it.
Well, SVP's there. He can just be like a part of the, like, he can be the remote Masters portion of it. So you like go from like crazy Roll Tide to like calm pine needles, birds tweeting in the background, Scott Van Pelt,
right,
Andy North,
right,
the Masters.
Or you could do, you like know? You could do a half and half episode, have half in Georgia in Athens and have the other half in Augusta, I guess.
Oh man,
just food for thought.
Man, I see, and this is getting me excited, and it's kind of like an article I read today too, where like since we have so much time on our hands, like once one seed gets planted, you just, the hamster wheels are just burning and turning, and your mind just goes crazy. Because Pete Thamel, he wrote an article about one of the unintended consequences from this is it could push us closer to an 8-team playoff sooner. Just from a financial standpoint, and he listed off kind of like all of the things that forced college football to make changes in the past, like the all SEC BCS final kind of directly led to the playoff, and how the Bowl Alliance mess up in the 90s and led to the BCS. This could be the financial losses that the NCAA had from a basketball standpoint. They could recoup by getting more revenue from the college football playoff, because that's the only money they make outside of what the conferences get for their TV deals. Because bowls make all the money. They're independently owned. And hell, ESPN owns like half of them.
Yeah, but more than that.
Yeah, they own a ton of them. And essentially, he talked to this anonymous athletic director who said of a perennial top 20 program, who said something along the lines of, like, essentially these bowls are in the NIT right now. Like, we need to get it more towards the NCAA model of things. And that could push us closer to an A-game playoff in as soon as 2 years, by 2022. Adam Luckett, would you like to see an 18 playoff in 2 years?
I've gone back and forth on it. I think 8 might be a little too much, but I do think just the day or the weekend you would play those first, like, 1-1 versus 8, I guess quarterfinals, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5, I think that would be just insane.
If they would do it
on the right day, because we have seen they have botched the timing of these games with the playoff not being played on New Year's every day, and
the Sugar Bowl and New Year's Eve. Ruin it.
Well, yeah, yes, I mean, it's majority Rose Bowl. I mean, that's the issue they have to get through. But, like, looking long term, that's where it's headed. So, yeah, I mean, would I want that? Hell yeah! That'd be fun as hell.
Especially if they get them to host the first four. Like, if you had,
well, yeah, just the yes, because we don't get that enough now. The non-conference games at home, like playing at other stadiums, just to have that, I think would be incredible.
Like, you know, imagine Alabama hosting Notre Dame,
right?
Or you know, Michigan going to Death Valley to play LSU. Like, I know the 1 versus 8 games would be bad, but you know what? We have a bad game every year. Whoever Oklahoma's playing, they get their ass kicked every year. So, like, to say that it's going to be more bad games, I'm not buying it. It's essentially just making the New Year's Six bigger. And you know what? If it just – they're still going to have those other bowl games, so that just means more football for the rest of us to watch. Yeah. And people are going to watch it.
Yeah, I think – I don't think. I would hope that this would maybe end there's too many bowl games crowd, because I would kill for a random-ass bowl game right now. I would kill for Smoothie King Frisco Bowl right now.
Oh, imagine – remember the Serve Pro Bowl that got canceled, like it never happened?
Yes.
Like – What if they actually did play it and we had never seen it and we could see it now? Like, I would watch Boise State versus Oklahoma State in a heartbeat. Give me that right now.
I have last year. Here's what the playoff would have looked like if it was 8 teams.
Okay.
Memphis at LSU. Good luck, Memphis.
Yeah. They score points, though.
Baylor at Ohio State. That would got pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Oregon at Clemson. Oregon could have probably hung out for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But where are you – then Oklahoma versus Georgia. I mean, LSU, they killed – I mean, LSU – last year is a little different because LSU was so good. I think LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson, and I think you can include Alabama in there, were just a lot better than everybody else. But that's what it looked like. You get some cool kind of matchups. Like Oregon coming across the country to play in Death Valley.
Ooh, there would be the storyline. It would be like when Oregon went to Durham for the 1942 Rose Bowl and played Duke. That would definitely – there would be a Tom and Aldi story on College Game Day, like taking it back to 1942. Which, by the way, former beat writer Jen Smith, her granddad, I believe, played in that bowl game.
Is that right?
Yeah, he played for Duke, I believe, before going and fighting in the war, which – that was kind of crazy reading about that game. Like, Wallace Wade was like, all right, well, we played the game. Now let's go fight for our country. Like, what a – whew. Times were certainly different.
That's a quick pivot.
Yeah, yeah. Go from a football game to killing Nazis. And which I've been watching
– go ahead.
I've been watching a lot of killing Nazi stuff during my quarantine times. Like that Hunters show on Amazon, great show. Just because killing Nazis, well, you know, what's not good about killing Nazis?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of streaming here. We've also been doing a lot of walking.
Yes.
To pass the time. Our dog's been, me and Taylor have been walking our dog Merle just about every day.
Merle's probably fit right now. Probably his best fitness he's ever been in.
Yeah, he's moving pretty good right about now.
Nice.
But I have another way I think it might change this whole thing, Nick.
Ooh, okay, hit me.
Like, I think let's just picture this. Let's say we get back and going. I think they're going to do something, if they can, to make up for the missed spring practice time.
Mm-hmm.
So either they're going to have, like, maybe an OTA, like the NFL does, where they pretty much come in and practice in, like, shells for a week or two. Or they're going to do an extended fall camp. And if we do that extended fall camp with you, teams lost the spring game potential revenue they got, why not let teams, if they wanted to, play a local FCS team in a scrimmage at the stadium?
Oh, yes.
Like,
yes.
Kentucky, why not let them play EKU?
Yes.
And then
the spring game they didn't have.
Do you know? Do you know what the NFL does? And they have these mixed practices, and then they'll play like a scrimmage at the end. I say maybe let them practice a couple times against each other, and then play an abbreviated game at Kroger Field or something where people can go on a Saturday.
Man,
and if that works, why not just do it where they play an actual FBS team in the future? Like, if that works, I think it's a really good idea. And I think potentially, if it works well, it could, if you could pay those FCS schools enough, it could be a way to take them off, the FCS teams off the schedule, but still allow them to make money in a certain way.
Because like all these conferences want to go to 9 conference games anyway.
Right.
And like, so.
And well, attendance just in general, they're struggling a little bit. This is one way to have a game where you're going to get the diehards and the junkies in there, 20, 30,000 just to see, you know, a practice pretty much.
Well, and then at the big schools too, you're getting 85, 90. So
right,
like,
right.
Hell yeah. You know what?
Why don't they play Youngstown State? Kentucky can play EKU. Louisville can play Murray or something. Alabama can play, I think it's Alabama State or North Alabama, you know, or Sanford or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be hard to do. Now, I don't think everybody could do it, but I think teams who wanted to, I think they could definitely pull that off.
You get Coach O to play his alma mater, Northwestern State. Northwestern State. The Red Devils, I think, is their name?
Devils. We'll look that up here.
I remember their logo from my first video game, College Football 1998. It had Tim. I just ran Tim Couch throws it deep to Craig East every single play.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, I mean it works most of the time. So
their mascot's name is Vic the Demon. They're the Demons.
Ah man, we were close.
They're purple and white. Purple Demons.
Yes.
But I just think, man, I just think stuff like that. I think college sports in general, like I think basketball could do a lot more stuff like that. Like these quiet scrimmages they're having, like some schools, Kentucky's not really doing it, but we hear about Jeff Goodman tweets out, "Oh, Ohio State beat Louisville in the secret scrimmage." Why aren't we letting fans go into those games and pay money like what's the point?
And you know what? I know that not every team can afford an international trip in August, but they should be able to have their own mini camp on campus and play against, you know, have a round robin. Why that isn't a thing? I mean, hell, volleyball gets a spring season, right, and they play against other teams. Why can't basketball do it too?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, we're just, you know what, Luckett? You separate us for a couple of weeks, and we put our brains together, and all of a sudden,
I've been brainstorming over here.
Freaking knowledge comes out.
I also have another scenario. Let's say the schedule does get delayed. I think the most they could probably delay it is 3 or 4 weeks. And imagine this scenario, Mr. Roush. Kentucky's first 3 weeks, the schedule doesn't start until week 4. So that they'd be playing Murray State week 1, pretty much first game. Those three games are moved to the end of the season.
Okay.
So what would be week, I guess, 10 or 11 or whatever would be at your actual week 1 opponent. So Kentucky's season would get shifted around where they would play Louisville on, you know, Thanksgiving Saturday, but then the next week, that December, first Saturday in December, they would play
Central Michigan.
Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan. And then you get Florida on the back end.
You would get Florida as your last game. And just imagine this scenario. Kentucky, damn near Christmas. finally gets to go to the swamp in cold weather. Decently, hopefully, some cold weather. And if they win, 60. They go to the SEC championship. We had to go to that game when it's 10 trillion degrees.
Oh, just sweat.
Imagine the scenario where an SEC's title is on, or not, SEC East title is on the line, and you finally get to play Florida in decent weather.
And you know what? I know we're going to talk about this a lot, but if you look at the win totals, Vegas thinks that Florida is just as much of the team to beat as Georgia.
My takeaway from that is Florida is the favorite in the East.
And you know what? That everybody always, like, I said this a year ago, that the Florida game was not just because it was on the road, but, like, Florida just in general scares me more than what Georgia has. They got Kyle Trask back. Tony is still there. Like, Florida has a lot.
I think it's more people getting bored with Georgia. If you look, Georgia has been there. What, you know, you're talking about 3 years in a row now where they've been legit national championship contender for the most part, but they haven't been able to get over the hump. I think it's more to do with some Georgia boredom than Florida. Because I think this Florida team is going to take a little bit of a step back this season from last year's team. When I've looked at them on paper, yeah.
Well,
because I mean, you remember how big I was on all those receivers they had last year,
right? Right, and they're most of them
all those guys are gone. That their O line low key kind of stunk last year. I mean, I don't see them taking a huge jump forward when I kind of look at their players there. The defense is going to lose a lot. You look at Grenard's gone, C.J. Henderson. So their defense
Zuniga gone too.
Zuniga's gone. So
yeah.
So I'm pumping the brakes a little bit on that on the Florida hype. I know that, but we need to get ready for them being. I mean, they're already hyping up themselves. But
going off the tracks, out of control.
And by the time we get close to the season, they're going to be. I mean, I'm serious. I think they're going to be close to kind of a consensus pick to win the East and to beat Georgia.
Ooh, dark horse national title contender. Can Dan Mullen get Florida back to the national?
I mean, they want Mullen to be. I mean, they're really pushing Mullen to be like he's the next Spurrier Urban.
People like him though, and I mean, like I think when our guys Bear and Stanford Steve, when they went through their coaches, like their five favorites, Mullen was one of them. And you can't help but respect him for what he. I mean, he did that at freaking Starkville.
But for the first time in his career. He's entering a season as a legit top five, top six contender. We haven't seen him in that space yet. So how does that work?
Because even the year that they were number one for a couple of weeks with Dak Prescott, that wasn't a
– They came out of nowhere. They were unranked in the preseason. They were undervalued. Right. And they took off like a rocket there in the month of September.
Oh, good. David Reese is gone, too. I hated that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Florida, I mean, Florida's still going to be – I'm not saying they're not going to be good. They're going to be good, but I'm not buying into that stock. I look at Georgia. This Georgia defense is going to be really, really, really nasty. Like, one of the best we've seen here recently.
On the other hand with Georgia, though, they're losing a ton of – they lost Thomas to the draft. On the offensive line, the one kid that transferred
Pittman's to Tennessee. Pittman's gone. The coach is gone.
Yeah, Jake Fromm gone. You don't have DeAndre Swift. I don't even know who they're running. Third
offensive coordinator in three seasons.
Yeah, so like there are definitely some reasons why you should have question marks of them just offensively.
My only thing is
that game's at home.
Yeah, for Kentucky, but the cocktail party, Georgia, Florida, comparing the two. Georgia still has better players, and they have a week. Both teams have a week off before that game, so they both have 2 weeks to prepare. I'm just going. Kirby has kind of owned Mullen to this point. In the last three seasons, he's beat him by double digits. I'm gonna think every game. So
you know what? This is just the light bulb behind my head just went off. Man, I would. Yeah, you would really hate to see Dan Mullen pull a Jim Harbaugh. I mean, like, they're both kind of dorks with their tight khakis, but, like, I could see it where, like, they have similar careers.
They both have smartest guy in the room syndrome. Where they, you know what I'm saying?
And
those are the worst. Those are the worst guys to deal with.
Okay. We can get in more than win totals, but I just, the Harbaugh thing popped into my head because. Last night, or two nights ago, or I don't know, the days, they're all running together. But one of these nights, I turned on Ohio State, Michigan from 2016. And it was the year that Harbaugh lost his mind on the spot of the ball.
Yeah, the spot game.
Okay, here's one thing I want to say, because I just have some random thoughts I want to spew out from watching random games, because I'm sure, like you, like I've been watching a lot of old games. Dude, SEC Network, what the hell is your problem? ESPN, you suck. You suck at your jobs. You're terrible. Do what Big Ten Network is doing.
Yes, I was hoping you were going there.
Dude, oh my gosh. So what ESPN does when they play old games, they will skip Dari Noka will come on and he'll say, "We now skip ahead in the action for time constraints to tune ahead," and I just butchered whatever he says, but they just jump tons of time in action and you miss plays for them to play the broadcast in its entirety. So you sit through like official reviews, and that freaking Belk Bowl game, it was like a 5-minute review because those Big 12 officials sucked. Their process for replay is garbage. We're sitting through all of that. Dude, that Ohio State-Michigan game, I watched in an hour because it was the condensed replay. It was just the plays, and that's all I care about. I don't need to see all this other gimmicky bullcrap.
I could have used
one more replay. I had to keep rewinding to see the spot on that fourth down. Dude, Harbaugh should have gotten mad. That was such a home cooking call. JT Barrett did not get that first down in overtime. Michigan should have won that game.
Yeah, but they did get screwed there.
And I realized the reason why I didn't watch that game, because I'm pretty sure that was the same day Lamar fumbled. I'm almost certain, in fact, that was happening at the same time. But, dude, ESPN, what the hell are you doing? Give us condensed games, or at least condense some of it. Dude, go into the editing trucks. We don't need all that garbage. We just want to see the game, and we don't want to miss action for it. I can't believe I'm saying this, Luckett, but the SEC needs to be more like the Big Ten.
Yes, I've noticed that too. And I've caught myself watching some of those Big Ten games. They're just an hour long. They speed up the plays too. Like, you're not in the huddle. Like, it's play, and then you're back to the play. You're not sitting through the play clock. Yes, I don't know. Like, SEC Network has enough money. They need to figure out how to do that for sure.
And it's not that hard. It's just spending a little bit of time in the not even editing truck. The people are at home with all this access. They can clip up some gobbledygook, get it out of there. They already got to edit out parts anyways for Dari to come on and tell us we're skipping ahead in the action. So, and
I also think they need to do a better job of like digging deep in the bank and pulling out some more random games.
Oh yeah,
like, give me a 1994 Florida, or give me 1995 Florida versus Tennessee. Give me 1997 when Peyton Manning was a senior. Everybody thought he was going to win the Heisman, and Florida went in there and kicked his daggum butt in Neyland Stadium. give me those games. Like, let's get a little deeper. Why not? Seem like I'm watching the same six or seven games when they go to these replays.
I don't need 2019 Alabama versus Texas A&M. Spoiler, Texas A&M gets their ass kicked. When I turned it on, I thought it was the Johnny football game because I thought it was 2014 or whatever. I just read it wrong. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, here's a good game instead of just some random crap from last year. ESPN, like, you have all of these resources. You've done a good – like I thought the Masters rebroadcast they had where they brought Tiger on Sunday and Jim Nance.
I didn't get the kids to see that, but I heard it was good.
Oh, yeah. It was I probably watched like an hour of it. It was really cool. CBS, they've done really well pulling some old classic games. I'm sure you watched plenty of those March Madness games. But with these football games, give me the old school Oklahoma and Brian Bosworth getting kicked off the field to play the Miami.
Well, right, CBS, yes.
Back in their heyday play. You have rights to all these games. Play them. And hell, even in those old games, I wouldn't mind watching the entire old broadcast.
Nick, the best thing about watching these old games, especially some of the ones I've gone back to watch on YouTube in the 90s, are the damn graphics. The graphics the intro and like the in-game graphics that they use.
Oh, they're incredible.
They use the play chart where they split the field in thirds, and they'll show you where the quarterback's been passing, and there'll be these big green X's or green circles. I mean, they're just – I love, and then the keys to the game, you know, the cheap graphic with two, three. And whoever runs for the most yards is going to win. Whoever wins the kicking game, I mean, just generic stuff, man. It's awesome.
What was the Bud, the Wolf of Budweiser?
Keys oh, yes.
Bud.
That, like that was
the Budweiser one. Six pack to the of success or something.
I'm pulling
like
up
that.
Right quick. Louisville's Budweiser game plan: transition defense, handle pressure slash good looks, keep Rebels off rim. But yes, we just stuff like that, man. It's we need more of that in a quarantine. I will say that.
Okay, all right. I have another huge takeaway. I watched this game actually in the hospital. It was my son's first college football game. And it's the college football game that's proclaimed as the greatest college football game of all time. And in hindsight, it is, man, that game is so romanticized. Like, it is so over-romanticized. And partially, I blame this all on Dan Fouts for being terrible at his job. What a garbage broadcaster.
Ruined Keith Jackson's last call.
Yo, he completely ruined it. Just steps all over it. And, like, here's the thing, ABC, if you've got a dry voice like Keith Jackson, you need a little bit of an animated personality next to him, not Dan frickin' Fouts. Give me a frickin' break. And you know what? As soon as that aired, I think everybody was sitting back watching it. They're like, God, this guy sucks. And you know what? CBS fired him a week later.
They did. I did see that.
It was worth it because he was terrible. And on top of all of that, too, just the game in general, like, the one part that isn't over-romanticized is, like, how stunning it was that that USC team lost, because they were just so much better than everybody else. But as far as like actual gameplay, like Vince Young, he was doing stuff that we see every Saturday in college football now.
But yeah,
like,
but you have defenses, to remember then it was just yeah, different, you know?
Exactly. Defenses just didn't know how to like compute some of that back then. But like now I'm like, shit, Jalen Hurts did that all day, every day, running around fools.
Was Will Muschamp their defensive coordinator for that game? I'm looking that up right now.
Man, young Mac Brown's kind
no, of... No, he was, not. He came to Texas a couple years after that. I think Chizik was their defensive coordinator. Yeah,
Texas really didn't have that many big NFL guys on that team either. Like,
well, that's
Brian Arakpo was a freshman, you know? Like,
that's the point. Aaron Ross was a corner who ended up playing for a long time in the NFL.
Yeah.
But the point was just the build-up for that game. Was because for about 3, 4, 5 years, but prior to that, Bob Stoops got to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma was kind of punking Texas, and they couldn't beat, Texas couldn't get past Oklahoma there for a little bit. And finally, Vince Young came, and they got, the year before in 04, they got past Oklahoma. I believe they won the Big 12. They went to the Rose Bowl because USC was in the national championship, and they beat Michigan. So then, like, Vince Young becomes like this star at the end of 2004, and everybody's looking at him the next season. But at the same time, there's this USC juggernaut where the year before in 04, I'm trying to think if Bush or Leinart won the Heisman. One of them won the Heisman. They're getting everybody back. They got another 1,000-yard running back in the backfield. They've got a bunch of good receivers. Defense is loaded.
Yeah. And their receivers were awesome on that team. And
Dwayne Jarrett, Steve Smith.
They were like the third act in that whole show. Because was Paul Amalu on that team as well, or was he earlier?
He was earlier. He was earlier.
Okay.
And then Malaluga was like a freshman on that team, I think. I think Malaluga, like Clay Matthews, Brian Cushing, I'm pretty sure they were like freshmen or sophomores on that team.
Which is crazy.
So, but that at that time, USC, they were the Alabama, you know, or the Clemson. I mean, that's who they were, kicking everybody's ass for the most part. And they were like the king of the sport. But Texas had the equalizer at number 10, and they lit up the Big 12. They ran the table. They go to the Heisman. He doesn't win the Heisman. And the story of was like, you know, that just pissed, that really, Texas says that's the reason they won the game. If they say if Vince Young would have won the Heisman, they probably don't win it. But that was just like this big motivating factor for them. And it was like this dual threat kind of era where you had to defend in space, and Young was just, you know, in the end of the game, USC got a little gassed. They were on their defense on the field a little too much. The offense just made one or two mistakes, and Texas made them pay and won the game in, you know, thrilling fashion there. The fourth quarter was awesome.
Well, and another part of it too, they were going for the three-peat, and I'm looking, and I'm scrolling through national champions, and I mean I'm going all the way back to Minnesota in 1936 for a three-peater, and that was chosen by, I don't even know who these organizations are. So, like, that hadn't happened. I remember they had the three-peat trademarked, and it was three-peat, P-E-T, P-E-T-E.
Yeah, I remember that too. Right.
Yeah, and we're just doing, like, what the 30 for 30 Troy did. I believe that was the name of it. Like, they were the cheat code that you couldn't play for in that college football video game, because Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush were the biggest stars in the sport. Mm-hmm. It's really a shame they weren't better professionally, but, like, that game's hype and just the fact that it ended, I think they were down, like, maybe, like, 10. They had two scores in the final, like, 3 or 4 minutes,
right.
Texas did, to win the game. And so here's my question to you, Luckett. Should Pete Carroll, he went for on that 4th and inches, should he have punted and made Vince Young go 100 yards or was going for it?
No, I still think that you coach the win there. I don't think it really. I think Vince Young was scoring a touchdown no matter what. So
yeah, I'm kind of with you there. But in really the funniest part of that entire game though is, like, as great as the end was, the beginning was so bad because USC looks like they're going to run all over them, and Reggie Bush just throws it over his head for no reason at all. He tries to do the little lateral thing. Like,
right. USC just they had some hero plays in that game from coaching standpoint and. Player standpoint, they got it a little out of hand, and they just, you know, Texas just hung around and ended up winning the. It's, for me, it's the best game I've ever seen.
Well, and the like you said, the unbelievability of it was incredible at the time, but it just the way that football was played back then versus now.
It looks like, Nick, I just looked it up. Notre Dame won 3 straight AP national championships, 46, 47, 48. Or no, excuse me. No, they didn't win in 48. Michigan won. So they won 3 out of 4. So yeah, I mean, you're going back a long ways trying to find a three-peat champion.
Yeah. So, like, that was.
Saban couldn't do it. I'm not sure anybody can do it.
I don't know. I mean, he did 3 out of 4. Hell, even they lost the Iron Bowl once. You know. So, and now in the playoff era, I don't think we're going to get it. And that's probably for the best.
Nebraska came close there in the 90s.
Yeah.
93 team, I believe they lost to Florida State in the national championship. And then they went and won in 94 and 95. So they were close.
And I think in 88, didn't Notre Dame? No, they beat Nebraska, right? Notre Dame beat Nebraska. Because Miami won 2 out of 3 in that term. I was thinking they might have beaten Miami.
That was the Catholics versus Convicts game that year, I think.
In 88?
I think so.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Catholics versus Convicts.
Yeah. So, like, Miami got close to it too, but that third time's a charm. Third time's a charm. Okay, I had one more random takeaway. I'm gonna hear if you have any random ones too. But this is just a very in general, like, on all UK matters. Like, Kentucky's just got to deliver some freaking daggers. That Citrus Bowl, Cats controlled the entire game. They won by 3 points. What the hell? Like, no business being in that game. And you know what? I'm not going to lie, Luckett. I was supposed to be like, hey, you have a newborn. Let's stay off your phone. But Cal was live tweeting that 2012 title game, and he was talking about going into grinded out mode with 8 minutes to go. And he was like, I knew we could do it because we were better defense. I'm like, well, I don't care if you knew you could win with it. Don't do it. It's stupid. What? Grinded out mode is playing not to lose. Yeah. Go for the kill, damn it. Oh.
If you got the better players, you probably should just play in a type of game that gets you as many possessions as possible to limit a couple bad possessions. Play as many possessions as possible if you got the best players. But
well, in the football team's standpoint, like, I get it. You're going to do it more often when you got ball control offense, but, like, because, like, that was their game plan for the most part anyway. But I think in that Citrus Bowl, we could all feel them kind of let off the gas after Benny's touchdown.
Well, yeah, but watching the game live from the stands, that's the first thing I said about the game was, like, I thought Kentucky really kind of controlled that. And then the fourth quarter, they just kind of, you know, they let the foot off the gas. And then you have to think Penn State has their foot all the way on the gas. And they're opening up the offense and they're just throwing it around because they know they have to come back. And then Kentucky gets that 3-and-out the worst time possible. And so it becomes a lot closer than it really needed to be. But like you said, that's kind of Stoops' MO is this ball control kind of offense. And it can be hard to blow teams out like that when you're limited possessions. because it limits the room for error on the other team's side, but it also limits your room for error too.
And it's just from a like, I know there like you just explained it in more detail, but there's just a natural like, damn it, you're the better team. Just go out and finish kicking their ass. Like, mm-hmm. It's Mortal Kombat. Finish him, you know? Like, and that's the part that just some of these old games, I'm like, just do it. Just get it.
Right.
Put them out of their misery.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that Kansas National Championship game, like, it's kind of nice watching that game stress-free. Because right. I really didn't.
If
I really
Gilchrist doesn't get that block, I mean, that would have.
Yeah.
Kentucky was never losing that game, but if he doesn't block that shot, then, I mean, it could have got really, really too close for comfort there. Well, if you really want to break it down.
And I watched the end of that Memphis game that Cal blew it. And Cal blew it. And that, I mean,
that was more, that team was an awful free throw shooting team, and they just couldn't make free throws. And
yeah, yeah. But they were the better team, too, like the entire time. But I think I was having those memories during that Kansas game because Cal hadn't won one yet. And it's like, oh, God, not Kansas again. And even though I hated that Derrick Rose team, I did not like them whatsoever. I didn't like Cal that much until he got here. Like, well, let's be honest here. We're in the trust tree. But I was happy they blew that game. Even so, their lead, they were up by like 9. He was Derrick Rose was hitting fadeaway bank shots from like 18 feet. With 4 minutes to go, and they still lost. Like that, it's amazing. It's amazing. Well, like, do you got any random thoughts from any of these old games?
No, I keep finding myself going back and watching this Kentucky Louisville football game though from this past season. Because
just like a good old fashioned asshole.
It was the damnedest thing, man. Seeing a team make their rival quit in a game that their rival entered thinking that they were going to win. I mean, that was just – and by doing it, by just running the football. I mean, I thought that like Kentucky was going to have their way and win by double digits. I didn't think they were going to put up – what was it, like 15 yards per play or something stupid?
Yeah, I think 13.7 or something crazy like that. did you happen to read Alex Kirshner's Lynn Bowden article?
I haven't read it yet. I did see he put that up.
So for we might have even talked about it on the podcast at the time, but we were standing next to Kirshner when it was during Bowden's media rounds at the combine, and it was the article just kind of goes into detail about just how stupid and crazy and rare of a breed that Lynn Bowden is, but that, you know, that's kind of like the ideal person for some NFL offensive coordinators now. It's just somebody you can throw out anywhere, and he's just a ball player.
Positionless football. Well,
it was funny, though, during that interview, just asking him, like, very bluntly, like, I know this sounds like a very dumb question, but, like, how did you do that? Just, it was just like the most like basic, it was like asking a 5-year-old a question, like, or a 5-year-old asking an adult a question, like, how did you make that sandwich? Like, I know I'm seeing it and I can see you doing this, but like, it needs to be explained further because it's incredible. This sandwich is delicious. It's spectacular. It's got pickles on it too. What? Lynn Bowden is pickles, spicy mustard, mayonnaise, and you know what? Let's throw a little bit of relish on there too, and maybe two different kinds of cheese, a little provolone, a little Munster, and you know what, heck, let's get some pepper jack because he's extra spicy. That's Lynn Bowden all in a nutshell, and it was just hilarious to like Lynn is not exactly the most eloquent of speakers, and Kirshner just being like, well, dude, like, but how? And he's like, well, I mean, have you seen me? Like, just went out there and played. And I think that's going to be, as we've seen in the lead up to the draft, all of the journos who are watching from afar love just watching this dude do crazy things on tape.
Yeah, I mean, from just a respect standpoint, I think Kentucky gets, their coaches get a lot of kudos for doing what they did. And then just seeing Bowden kind of operate in a game, like when you turn on the tape, I mean, it's really cool. I mean, it's cool to see. And it helps that Kentucky that they got to end the year with some run defenses that weren't very good. You know, when you look at Vanderbilt, UT Martin.
Louisville.
And we forget the UT Martin. Do you remember the first two plays of that game?
They were safeties, right?
Yeah, they double snapped. Safety? One was a safety, one was a touchdown. They snapped it over the guy's head twice in a row.
Oh, man. We almost got a 4-0 score. Yeah. That would have been electric.
We should do an oral history on that.
And you had a little Petrino coaching.
Yeah.
With, oh.
And the weather that day was probably worse than it was for the next week.
You know, like when we look back on that year, what a weird, just my, to go from like historic Josh Allen, Benny Snell, like some of the best players to ever play their positions at the program, to then like having just the most back-assward season ever with just rain and like, my goodness, like it was like yakety sacks were playing, but yet Kentucky wasn't the one with the egg on their face at the end. They ended up winning. And it's kind of like what I'm doing. Like, we're like, every few days, I'll just be like, wow, I created another human. Like, this is my human, and I can't believe this is real. It's kind of what we're going to be doing with this football season for years to come. Like, that happened. Like, Kentucky won 8 games with a receiver playing quarterback.
I remember sitting in the box on Jared Lorenzen Day with you and Tyler, and us all looking at each other I think Arkansas was up like 10-0 or whatever, middle of the second quarter.
Rakeem Boyd scored like the second play of the game.
First play of the game, yeah. And we're just looking at each other like, oh, this don't look good. And they flipped it in the second half, and they just kind of took off from there, man. And it was a fun ride there to the end of the season. Even like going down to Georgia, like I didn't know what to expect, man, because they were like, it was piss raining. They were going to try to run this offense against a defense that they really couldn't. At best, that for the most part, it was going to be a stalemate at the line. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
right.
It was going to be tough. And they hung in there. But that was the moment, I think, that I knew. I was like, hold on a minute. They could really do some stuff here. If that's the defense, I know the conditions or whatnot, but, like, they were winning the battle at the point of attack on defense, and they were flying around and making some plays. I knew, like, right then, I was like, if that's the defense they're getting, they might be able to do something here at 10 of the season.
This could work.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And they ended up doing something. They won 8 games, hit the over for the win total. And look, is that 3 or 4 years in a row now that Kentucky's hit the win total? It's got to be 4, right?
Yeah, they hit it in 16, hit it in 18 and 19. The only question will be 17. I think it was like sitting there at 6, 6.5. As long as it didn't hit 7, they've hit it every year.
Yeah, and this year it's 7 again.
Yeah, there's more value on it this year, man. Nick, I want to tell you a little exercise I did.
Ooh, a little exercise. Okay.
I do this every year season totals come out. And remember last year we released our season totals. I think I went 8-2 or 9-1.
Yeah.
So this, I think of all the things I do from a gambling perspective, this is probably the best thing I do. So pretty much I write out the schedules. I pick winners and losses, winners and losers for each game. And then I base that number I get and see if there's any value on whether to play at each side.
It's kind of how I used to do with S&P Plus and lines. Like, where's the big discrepancy?
Right.
And then I'm going to go for that.
Where's the biggest margin for room to wiggle in?
Yes. But now Vegas, they're getting a little bit wiser with those analytics too. But so, where did you find some discrepancy, Mr. Luckett?
Well, anyway, I told myself going into this, I was like, I'm not going to have Kentucky win the East. Like, I'm going to do kind of conservative. I'm not going to do it. But I'll be damned if at the end of that exercise, I didn't write them off at 10-2.
Oh, I love it.
Because, I try to think like how this is going to break out. And I really do, deep in my soul, believe they're either going to get Florida and Gainesville or Auburn on the Plains. They're going to get one of those.
And my feeling is Auburn, just because Auburn's good one year, bad the next. And, you know, they're pretty good last year.
And then I look at the rest of the schedule, like Eastern Michigan, Kent State, they're both, you know, double digit, at least 3 touchdowns, probably better than. South Carolina comes into town. I think they're going to be fine there, obviously. They go to Auburn, then they get a nice little break, Eastern Illinois. You get Vanderbilt at home. Vanderbilt's going to be really bad, it's looking like. The offense is going to really stink.
Yeah.
You go to Missouri. Missouri's in a transition year. I think Missouri's not going to be very good. So that's not like a daunting road trip or anything.
Nope.
You go to Tennessee. That's one I'm like, until they beat Tennessee, I'm just like, I've got to see it kind of thing.
I'm with you. That just going to Neyland, that just place just screams
but
suck.
But after yeah. that, I think they're kind of the perfect team ready to take on a Leach the offense because of their pass defense. I mean, their pass defense should be one of the best in the country. This next year. And then if you get to that point, then you're looking at you're sitting there at 8-2. Georgia is coming into town. It's just time. Like how could you not pick them to win that when you get that far? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's like the scenario. And then I was like, well, if they beat Georgia, they sure as hell ain't losing to Louisville next week, the week before going to Atlanta. That would just be the worst thing ever.
Right, right. Well, and even in all of this, they're at least at 7. Like,
yeah, come on. I found the most value in the SEC for what I've done so far on Kentucky. And then I've got a couple other ones I like. We can get to those if we want.
South Carolina's only at 5.5.
5.5. Yeah, that's one. I have them. A lot of these SEC ones are really good. Like, Auburn's 8.5. They're either winning 8 or 9. Like, they're going to fall right in, on one side of the number.
A&M all the way up to 9.5, though. Mm-hmm. And all is Jimbo going to do it this year?
That's another team, man. You look at this schedule, like, let me pull it up here.
You know how I know you're a football guy? Look it, because you're using actual pieces of paper to pull up this stuff.
Yeah. I got to have something to keep me busy, man. I mean, you just look at this schedule, like, non-conference, it's Abilene Christian, North Texas, Colorado. And Fresno State, all at home. They got let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 home games, but then their other home game is in Dallas against Arkansas. Arkansas's rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, their road trips are Mississippi State. They should win that one. Auburn, 50-50 game that the road team usually always wins. At South Carolina, at Alabama. Yeah. So, they don't play Alabama and LSU to the last 2 weeks of the season. So, I mean, you're potentially looking at a year where their A&M's in the top 5, you know, all season, if they can win at Auburn.
Man, I love just thinking about how bad South Carolina can be this year.
Yeah, I could definitely see that falling off the tracks. Ain't no doubt about that.
Recommit to the run game.
But one thing they did well this year, is just the non-conference schedule is manageable. All three are at home, and all three they're going to be double-digit favorites in. Unlike what they've done in the past, playing some neutral site games.
Oh man!
In Tennessee, well, I noticed this. Tennessee goes to Oklahoma, week 2, I think.
They go to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
So we'll find out about them pretty fast. They have Oklahoma week 2, Florida week 4.
You know, the thing that's – I mean, it ended up not being the case last year because they either got benched or got hurt. But, like, last year we at least had a good idea of the quarterback picture.
That's another thing. Did you see what Jordan Rogers said the other day on the little SEC, like, Facebook show they're doing?
No, I didn't. But I might steal his thunder by saying if there's one thing that's going to hurt – all this time being away, it's less about like weight training. It's more about just quarterback play and teams of quarterback competitions. How do you figure that out away from campus? Well,
just
you know?
Take all that out. Just the SEC in general. Like he said, Kellen Mond's the top quarterback in the SEC.
God, that's gross. And he sucked for a lot of last year. He was disappointing in my opinion.
And who here in our footprint would trade Terry Wilson for Kellen Mond straight up?
Nobody.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's probably one or two quarterbacks I would trade in the SEC for – I would trade Terry away for. That's one's the Alabama freshman that I'm really high on that I think is going to be the best quarterback. And that's one. He might be the only one now that I think about it.
Yeah, because, like, I don't want Trask in Eddie Grant's offense. You know, I want somebody who can move around a little bit.
Right.
He would probably be your second best
right
SEC quarterback. Right. Like, there's just not – the depth isn't there this year like it was a year ago. And so that's where Kentucky is going to have an advantage, because at least they know who their guy is, and we don't have to do all of this. Like, we're not going to be writing about a quarterback competition once a day, you know, well, 7 days a week.
When you were projecting this season in particular as being the year, you were hoping Terry had, you know, he had the starter season, he had the junior year where he could make a, you know, a jump, and then another year where he could make another jump. That was kind of a limit. The injury kind of took that off the table, which sucks. So now you're entering a season where first he's got to build the, you know, the trust back in his knee before he can ever, you know, he's got to do that first. He's got to be able to be comfortable out there before he can make the plays he needs to be able to make.
Right.
And when you look at the roster, man, like, it seems pretty set in stone that the starters at receiver are going to be Ali and Daly on the outside, and then Cleavon Thomas and in the slot. And then that's who's going to start, and then how the rotation shakes out will be determined in camp. But those are the three guys. Yep. So,
yeah, but yeah, there's a three, and then everybody else.
And all those guys have been in the program. Two of them have been in the program for 4 years. The other two have been in the program, specifically Eddie Grant's offense. This is his third year. Now they've had multiple position coaches, but in the program, in the scheme, like, they're like, and coming off a year where they didn't get the ball thrown to them, to put it bluntly, they need to be chomping at the bit, ready to get going. It's kind of a prove it year for all of them. And you're getting a quarterback back.
Exactly.
Like, there's no real excuses, man. You know, you look at it, you look at a guy like Keaton Upshaw, he's a walking mismatch, I think, and he's going to be a real key part to the offense, I think, this year, when how they use him and try to get some one-on-one situations with him, because he's going to be a tough cover if they align him in the different spots correctly. And then you look, the offensive line, they're just going to be able to lean on a lot of people and create, you know, just traditional running lanes. And so if Terry can become that playmaker for you at quarterback, I think, because that's who I think it has to be for the offense, I think you could really have something special this year. But I think a lot of it rides on Terry. He's got he's got the experience, he's got the whole line around him, he's got the running game, but he needs to become, I think, the guy for the offense. Like, he needs to become the playmaker, you know, the difference maker on the team. It's been Benny, it's been Lynn, it's been the offensive line. But now I think it has to be Terry. And that's why I hate it for him that he missed last year, because I thought that would have been good to get, you know, a bunch more snaps and reps under his belt for this huge senior season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's one of those things that it would have been nice, too, to have him get some time to kind of get his legs underneath him, no pun intended, and get some more reps with him. But you know what?
Yeah,
it's better than where a lot of those other SEC schools are at. Trying to, like, you really think you're confident in Jaron Garantano going out there, or God knows who else Jeremy Pruitt's got to throw out there.
Danny Clark might be starting for Vanderbilt, man.
That's hilarious. Oh, Vandy.
But yeah, like, Vandy. You look at the I wouldn't take Trask over Terry. Like, you look at some of these Jamie Newman, I wouldn't take him over Terry Wilson. Like, I think.
Ooh. Like, ooh, he put up good numbers in the ACC. That's so tough.
I think we could have a legit argument that says, like if we're tearing these quarterbacks in the SEC right now, and you're telling me that I can't put Bryce Young in there at all, I might just have eight quarterbacks in tier one, because they're all, like, the same to me right now. Like, no one's that much above the other. It's kind of just like it's kind of a mess, to be honest. And it could be a year where the team that wins the league or wins the two divisions, it's the surrounding parts, you know, the cast, not necessarily the quarterback. Where those last couple of years with Burrow and Tua, it's been, you know, the quarterback that's won it. Maybe it might just be the old school kind of SEC football.
Oh, man.
And it's exciting. I just thought if that's the case, if all the quarterbacks are pretty average, they have a shot, especially if this is the year that they can take the offensive jump and maybe improve that passing game. They're going to have a real shot.
I just like that there for about 10 minutes. I felt like I just let you off the reins, and you just, like, you're like a wild horse who just, they've been trying to tame you, and you're just like, damn it, I got to run free. Just let me run. And that was you running right there.
Nick, I feel so weird, man, because, like, usually, like, it's like, when the tournament comes, I'm all in on the tournament. I'm focused on basketball. And then after that, you have the basketball recruiting, so like the grad transfers, the stuff like that, the masters, I get into that. And then after that, usually, then I'm like, okay, that's when, you know, the win totals come out. Then I start slowly diving into this. Well, I've had 4 weeks of free time to not do anything. So I've just been kind of like, Phil still needs to release his magazine in May. Like, what the hell are we waiting on? He's had 3 or 4 empty weeks. Like, I need that. It, like, I need it. Just give it to me.
Oh, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, next week we got the NFL draft, and I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do for it, but we're going to do something because it's the closest thing to football. We're going to have this close thing to sports we're going to have for the foreseeable future.
I'm excited to see how this is going to go with these guys using these virtual draft
picks.
They're just begging to be hacked, man.
Oh, man. I hope we have like a Laramie Tunsil situation, except with like a college football coach, like, or not a, like an NFL coach, like peeing into like a dip spitter.
Or like Tom Herman did, flicked off the camera on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, oh, I apologize. Shut up, Tom. Just shut up. But that'll be exciting. The draft starts Thursday next week. We'll have a podcast after you Tuesday, maybe something more. We're still trying to figure all that out. But we got to end the show with a big congrats to our guy, Austin McGinnis.
How about it, man?
He's going to be an L.A. Ram. What if McGinnis, he could, in theory, he could open up that new football stadium?
Oh, that thing's going to be a sight.
It's a palace. Right. Yeah. It's going to be incredible. So he's going to be competing with a kid from the CFL that they signed as well.
I saw that. I saw they signed two kickers.
So
interesting
strategy. Congrats to Austin. He's getting his shot, making the 90-man roster. Who knows when he'll actually get to compete and go up, you know, and actually do that.
Well, I'm assuming he's getting those NFL checks now. So, or actually, I don't know how that works because NFL, they get paid on Sundays. I'd assume he got some type of signing bonus or something.
Well, they're doing the virtual OTAs. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he'll get paid for that, even if it is just like what does a kicker do during virtual OTAs?
Yeah. See, I don't know. Like, that's a good question. Like these guys they bring in for camp and don't make the team, like the rest of the guys get paid on Sundays. But like I guess they give them a lump sum when they're done with camp or something, like time served, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But you know,
something you could ask Austin on the
I was going to say, we know
a guy. Podcast.
Oh, man. Well, like it feels good to get back in the saddle. You know, figuring things out, slowly but surely getting back into the groove of this thing. And it's exciting. We're going to have plenty of exciting stuff coming your way. I think we're going to do the cool thing is too, Luckett, is we couldn't do it this time, but we can take over that Zoom account. We can just talk football with the fans too. We can do a lot of cool stuff. That even though
virtual Q&A? We can podcast
together. Yeah.
Tease with it, the idea, but maybe that's how we do it. Go all in, do a virtual Q&A. That might be the way to go.
Hell yeah. Why the hell not? What do we got to lose? And you know what? I'm growing out my mustache, so I'll make sure it's in full dick effect.
Oh, my hair is getting long, brother. I probably should have went and got it clipped before everything shut
sick
down.
Sick brag, bro.
Oh, my. If I was in person, I wouldn't have said that, but I'm not in person. God, my bad, man.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Luckett, thanks for doing this again. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It's been fun to get back in the saddle with 11 personnel. And we'll be back with you next week to get you ready for the NFL draft, an online edition of 11 personnel. Even though we're far apart, still go Cats and safely go Kroger.